Hello everyone, welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. And it's my great pleasure to welcome to today's program Arun Samuga, who's VP of Research and Development at Alemica. And today we're going to talk about the power of supply chain operating networks. Now, if you've been watching this program or reading my writings over the past few years, you know that one of the things I've been saying a lot in the industry and recommending to manufacturers, retailers, 3PLs, and so forth is that to really drive supply chain innovation, you need more than software. You also need, strong trading partner connectivity, the ability to communicate, collaborate with your trading partners, whether those be suppliers or customers, carriers, just anyone external that contributes to your supply chain. And so I've been a big advocate of supply chain operating networks, but I still find that a lot of folks still don't understand quite what that means. And there's some confusion about it. Trying to understand what is the value proposition, how is it different than, EDI or other forms of connectivity, so on and so forth. So that's some of the questions that we're going to explore today with Arun. So I'm very happy to have him on the program. I just want to remind all of you that are joining us today that, part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you do have a question or a comment for Arun as we're having our conversation here, you can do so via the post a question button, and I'll keep an eye on it. And certainly if we've got a, if it's a good and appropriate question, we've got time, I'll try to weave it into the conversation. Just a reminder that if you do want to ask a question and you're registered as a user, you will need to sign in first before you can ask a question. So with that, Arun, welcome to the program.
Hi, Adrian, and fellow thought workers on Spreecast. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, certainly appreciate you making the time. Arun, this is the first time on the program for you. So usually when I have a new guest on, I like to find out a little bit about their background and how they got involved in the industry. So why don't we start there before we kind of dive into the topic? Why don't you tell us a little bit, about your career path, how and why you got, involved with supply chain logistics and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Alemica?
Sure. I have about 20 years of experience in the information technology area. And I work directly and indirectly with a lot of large companies across multiple verticals like the airline industry, the finance industry, the utilities industry, and finally the paper industry that led me to the process industry, so to say. And I've also been very lucky to have had the opportunity to work in different countries, experience different cultures, India, Japan, United Arab Emirates, United Kingdom, and of course the United States of America, and a lot of overseas trips to the EU. So I over these past, especially the past 5 to 10 years, I've seen and lived the evolution of technology as it changed radically. And currently, I lead a world-class team of individuals, as I like to call them. I lead the research and development at Alemica, and I pioneered the SCON, or the Supply Chain Operating Network vision for Alemica.
Great background, international experience. Obviously, that's so critical these days in supply chain management. And, so let's talk about, supply chain operating network, right? So you've got supply chain operating networks, you've got B2B connectivity, you've got EDI networks. Those terms are often used interchangeably, but are they the same things? And if not, how are they different?
They are definitely not the same thing. So let me start there. I put a stake in the ground and say they are definitely not the same thing. While EDI and B2B connectivity has got a little bit of, they're used relatively interchangeably. However, it represents one aspect of the SCON. So what EDI and B2B connectivity stood for, and I think it still stands for, is when you have a primary focus on data delivery between partners. So point A to point B, let me send you a message and you send me something back. And the fundamental objective is process automation and nothing more than that. So it's basically reducing cost. And when you think of something like a SCON, then you're really talking about an ecosystem, which is very different because the goal of an ecosystem is, in that same example, once the data is exchanged, all parties involved can look at their process behaviors and actually start collaborating on improving the way they do business, as opposed to just saying, here's my message, you send me another message, and now we've enabled electronic commerce, but all we've achieved is basic process automation. So in that regard, I think the level of sophistication is fundamentally missing in an EDI or a B2B connectivity type network.
So it sounds like, and I want to explore this topic a little bit later, but it sounds like, you know, EDI historically and today is still primarily, you know, one-to-one, if you will, types of exchange of information and documents, so on and so forth, whereas the supply chain operating network really kind of creates this notion of a community and the ability to, you know, for data to be shared or as appropriately, you know, with multiple partners that are part of that ecosystem. But let me ask a quick question here. I mean, so do you see supply chain operating networks replacing EDI, or does EDI still have a role to play, you know, today and in the future?
So I'll turn a leaf from your book, if I may. So I think you had mentioned once, you talk about companies of tomorrow and companies of yesterday, right?
So that's me. Yep.
Yeah. So in my mind, as time continues to pass, there will be a point where companies who only rely on EDI will be left behind. So there is going to be an inflection point to where companies over relying on EDI alone will start losing some fundamental capabilities around differentiation. And that differentiation is basically enriched experience with their trading partners. So those are the companies that will become companies of yesterday. Now, EDI has and will have a role to play, but it's just an enabler for process automation. It's not going to be a real value addition or a value differentiator within the overall concept of an ecosystem. An ecosystem and supply chain operating network is something I typically tend to use interchangeably.
So let's and I think that's a good distinction. And I certainly, when I talk about, you know, companies of the future or companies of tomorrow, certainly view, you know, the use of supply chain operating networks as kind of that platform for you know, B2B collaboration and communication. You know, and I often position supply chain operating networks as kind of the business equivalent of Facebook and LinkedIn. You know, do you agree, number one? And if so, how are they similar? You know, in other words, how are social networking, you know, capabilities and technology enhancing supply chain communication and collaboration?
So good question. Every time you think of social, I think Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter just comes to mind. Now, what Facebook and LinkedIn particularly have done really well is, one, they have proven conclusively that collaboration has value. I mean, otherwise, they would not be as big as they are. And then the second thing they've proven is that the ease of collaboration that they enable, it brings about interesting trends, especially between people who start commenting, who start sharing, who start liking, broadcasting, and so on and so forth. So if you take some of these elements around collaboration as being, as having intrinsic value, and trying to see how some of these emerging trends that have been proven in the social networking world can map into a B2B type space, then I'm thinking of, again, going back to an ecosystem where you start thinking about one person or a small group of people actually beginning to create massive changes. So for example, a customer service representative or a person in an information technology department within a large or a small company may have found something interesting, may have created some trends, and can actually start creating changes by using some mechanisms like global broadcasting, scope-based broadcasting, one-on-one communications, and you know, so there is value for everyone who participates, and change does not need to necessarily be a top-down hierarchical bureaucratic process.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And you know, often when I talk about, you know, the role of social networking in supply chain management, you know, I talk about really it is a platform to be able to communicate and collaborate on a much larger scale than you could through, you know, more historical or traditional means of communication, whether they're the fax or the telephone or face-to-face meetings and so forth. And certainly, I think when you have this community of trading partners, that becomes kind of the foundation, you know, to be able to do some of that. You know, kind of to continue with the Facebook, LinkedIn kind of analogy there. I mean, we've seen from those networks that the larger the network and the more capabilities that are added to the platform, you know, the more value it provides to everyone that participates. And, you know, a similar dynamic exists in kind of the business world, right? And with supply chain operating networks. So, but one of the challenges that I see historically has been, you know, onboarding trading partners. For a lot of companies, that's always been a very time consuming and costly process. Is the onboarding process, you know, easier today than it was in the past? And if so, in what ways?
So let me try to answer that with a short story, if I may, because, you know, as a company, as Elemica, we got our fingers burnt, you know, the whole idea. So we've been around since 2000, approximately. And for the first 8 to 9 years, I would say, our objective was to start, was to gain some amount of traction in the marketplace and get some of these large process industries and their trading partners on board. Over a period of time, we realized that the additional cost of onboarding a partner was exactly the same as it was adding the first partner. Now, another trend that was emerging was large companies are now left with a long tail of trading partners, and these trading partners do not fall in the same place in the value chain, if I may, for these large companies, incumbent companies. For them to accept the fact that the cost of additional onboarding of a relatively low spend, low value type trading partner is not any different from a large partner was just mind-boggling. And we did some calculations saying, okay, if we were to take this company ABC and get all their 5,000 trading partners at this particular rate, it could take us about 300 years. And we said, that's obviously not acceptable, especially when you're talking about a network and trying to create change and trying to collaborate and get the butterfly effect and so on. So that's another aspect. The third aspect was there was this heavy push into standards. And I think Elemica was also part of the Chem-E standards or the CIDX standard group. And, you know, there was a lot of commotion. There was a lot of good things that came out as a result because there were rules around business processes and so on. But the fundamental problem was, at the end of the day, it was trying to replicate what EDI wanted to do. So you were just trying to automate a process. But while that's important to automate the process, the cost of automating the process should not be the same for the entire trading partner community. So we realized that we need to reduce it from months to weeks to days to potentially hours. So what we did was we invested some money in research and we said, let's look at the emerging trends. We look at business social, we look at cloud, we looked at mobile technology, and of course, with a constant awareness towards the needs around analytics, we said, let's start from scratch and come up with new concepts and new ways of looking at onboarding. So we took the process itself and broke it down into like minute atomic particles called universal business concepts. And these are just, you know, representations of the business signals in its most atomic part. And once we did that, we realized that the aspect of mapping and data transformation became significantly easier. It became easy to configure all of these. And that's when we were awarded two patents, actually, for the technology that we put in place. So as of now, I think we're talking about hours and days versus weeks and months from an onboarding perspective. So to answer your question, yes, it has been a time consuming process, but based on our history and the recent investments that we made, I think we're looking pretty good now.
No, that's great. I appreciate you kind of sharing that story in terms of your own kind of personal example there in terms of the evolution that you had to go through, because I think that has been kind of a challenge to kind of reach that critical mass, if you will. You know, around these networks has been, you know, how do you get these, you know, the trading partners on board relatively quickly, relatively easily, relatively cost effectively, particularly as you talked about, a lot of companies have those EDI connections, but it's usually with, you know, 20% of their suppliers, right? Or 20% of their trading partners that arguably, yes, probably represent 80% of their transactions, but there's a lot of opportunities you know, with that 80% of the supplier base or the trading partner base that's really not connected there, that can really, if they were on board and you were able to kind of bring them as part of the community and extend business processes out to them, certainly a lot of potential for value, which is really kind of leads perfectly to my next question. You know, the title of the episode is The Power of Supply Chain Operating Networks. You know, that is, you know, what kind of, you know, unique processes or different processes can supply chain operating networks enable, and what are the associated benefits that companies can achieve? So can you share some examples or ideas around that?
Sure. I think one of the biggest advantages of using a supply chain operating network in order to, you know, create an ecosystem eventually is interoperability from a process and from a supply chain node perspective. So in a typical point-to-point EDI type connection, one of the things you'd see is I'm able to send you a message, you send me back a message, and we are done. Now, that's like taking, like transporting yourself from point A to point B and not even experiencing what happens in the middle, right? And all you know is point A and all you know is point B. However, if you go through a route where you're able to communicate with a few people along the way, learn to know the places in between really well, and actually gather this information, not only are you going to be more informed, you're going to start looking out for patterns, similar patterns, as you go from point C to point D in the future. And you can start applying these learning experiences as you go. I know it's a little theoretical, but having said that, what I'm trying to get at is, if you believe in interoperability, interoperability is extremely powerful, because once you are hooked on to a network, or once you hook yourself onto a network, you can actually access the rest of the network with minimal work on your side. And that is the power of interoperability. With a point-to-point type network, you will have to spend that much extra time, effort, money, etc., in establishing those relationships. So that's the first important aspect, as in you can get to that threshold of trading partners very quickly. The second thing is, we touched upon it briefly earlier, is around the ability to mass onboard, this long tail, the 80-20 rule. Now, with products like, you know, campaigns, campaign management, automated onboarding tools, you can actually create mass onboarding programs, use the business social concepts like broadcasting, track some of these responses, get some of these trading partners automatically onboarded, do mass setups across different systems in order to enable them, and you know, use some of these emerging technologies in order to mass onboard people. So that way, you've got like 300 to 400 people onboarded in one go, as opposed to it being a very sequential process. So that's another area where I definitely see a lot of advantages. The third, I think, the one that's very, very important is cross-process visibility. So think of a situation where you have a buyer, a supplier, a logistics service provider, and a bank or a payment institution. Now, all four of them are, at the end of the day, looking at one particular shipment, because somebody is buying it, somebody is selling it, as in somebody is manufacturing it, somebody is shipping it, and somebody is paying for it, and so on. Now, wouldn't it be great if, through the power of these atomic, you know, free-floating particles, like universal business concepts, that we are able to automatically relate these various business signals, like the purchase order goes from the buyer to the supplier, the order response comes from the supplier to the buyer, the ship notice and the invoice comes from the supplier to the buyer, the carrier gets paid, the freight forwarder gets paid, and so on. Now, all these transactions, if they are inherently correlated and if they are made visible and you have all these parties looking at the same thing, imagine the amount of noise you're able to take out of the system. So that, to me, cross-process visibility is extremely powerful, because it immediately provides value to the different nodes within a multi-echelon supply chain. And we keep talking about big data as well. I know it's at its infancy from a B2B perspective. It has demonstrated its abilities and advantages in the B2C space, especially around targeted differentiation, value of loyalty, and click-through rates and conversions, etc. But if there is any hope to leveraging big data in any tangible way, you definitely need a SCORN. I mean, you just cannot do it without a SCORN. I mean, the first step is visibility, and you need to have visibility without any latency so that the user actions on a variety of data can be immediately translated to competitive differentiation. So mass onboarding, cross-process visibility, interoperability, and analytics and visibility are some of the key areas that I don't think are really possible in the future in an effective way without a SCORN type model.
I agree. I mean, your point about, I'll paraphrase it a little bit with regards to the visibility in terms of having that kind of nested visibility where you're able to connect things like purchase orders to bills of lading to, proof of delivery, so on and so forth, and be able to, correlate all those different messages and documents and so forth, I think is very powerful. And so it's certainly something that companies have been, I've called it kind of the holy grail of visibility that companies have had to, been in pursuit of for so many years. And I think, supply chain operating networks, I think is a step forward in achieving, that objective. I think the other opportunities that exist, to make the analogies with kind of the social networks is the opportunity to discover, new suppliers, new trading partners, right? So in the way that we may, find new friends or new business connections via LinkedIn or Facebook, the ability to say, hey, I need a new supplier of X. I wonder if there's such a supplier on the network, right? And be able to search for suppliers that meet this kind of criteria, whether it's product type, whether it's by geographic region. If it's a transportation provider, it's perhaps, do they have this type of equipment type in this geography? So to be able to discover new trading partners, I think is a powerful opportunity that exists within the network. And finally, kind of to build on your business BI and analytics, I think what I call network-based business intelligence is a powerful opportunity as well. Because a lot of companies, what they struggle with is, they know how they're doing relative to their metrics compared to last year, right? They know how they're doing compared to their plan. What they struggle with is knowing, well, how are we doing compared to our peers in the industry, or how are we doing compared to others that have a similar supply chain? And the ability for a network provider to aggregate all that data that's going through your network, run it through some models, and be able to create some benchmark data that that can provide value to the participants, I think is another powerful dimension of the value proposition that these networks can provide. I don't know if you agree or disagree with what I just said there.
Oh, I completely agree. In fact, partner discovery, it's interesting you bring that up. That was probably one of the first things we enabled as part of our SCORN, because the first problem that we tried to solve was, what does our network look like? And we're like, okay, for our own good, let's make it visible and then open it up to the rest of the world. So I completely see where you're coming from, and it strikes a chord with where we were.
So now let's let's talk a little bit about it. And you probably already touched upon some of these things. So I guess at a high level, if you're looking at a supply chain operating network, I mean, what capabilities or attributes should companies look for in a supply chain operating network to say, okay, this is kind of the baseline capabilities functionality that ought to be present in a supply chain operating network?
I think you touched upon it briefly, Adrian. It's about you have a SCORN provider, you have multiple supply chain operating network providers. You need to not only look at how people performed yesterday or how people performed last year or trends of that nature. You need to be able to look at your industry. So, and that's true with supply chain operating networks as well. So you need to pick one or choose one or more depending on your need. And those who are not only active in your industry, but those who also demonstrate who have a good track record of delivering results for the industry in entirety. It shouldn't just be that you end up showing value to like one particular partner on the network and trying to proclaim a victory, because that's not the goal. The goal is to raise the bar through collaboration and create an effective business network. Now, the effectiveness of any business network or ecosystem Also depends on the number of trading partners as well as the quality of the trading partners on the network. So if you end up with network partners, just like say Facebook, there you might have 100 friends, and if they don't communicate with you, then that channel is pretty dormant and it's not necessarily useful. In some cases, maybe it's useful, I don't know. But it's also important to consider the breadth and depth of business process automation and support, because at the end of the day, process automation is the first step that you're looking for. And if you don't take that step when it comes to establishing a network, then you're not able to leverage some of the benefits of the ecosystem. So the goal is to leverage the benefits of the ecosystem very quickly and effectively. But for that, you need to reach a critical mass of trading partners. And that's why you need to be very careful when you choose a SCORM provider. Look within your industry and look for demonstrable results.
Great, great points. You know, I had the privilege of speaking at your user conferences last year, and I remember at your event in Frankfurt, one of your customers gave a great presentation, and maybe this is a lead in to my next question here, but he kind of gave his perspective on what the future of supply chain operating networks ought to be. And one of the things that he talked about, which I think is spot on, is, you know, the ability for different networks to communicate and collaborate with one another, you know, kind of having this concept of the federation of networks. Almost the way we, again, to make the analogy with social media, almost like you can almost log in to, even with here with Spreecast, you can log in with your LinkedIn account or your Facebook account, right? So there's obviously some interoperability between these social networks. His thought was that, particularly because in the chemical industry, right, you service and work with a lot of different industry, automotive, for example, high tech, so on and so forth. So the ability to interoperate with other operating networks was something that he brought up. So I guess that's your comment on that thought. And then to build on top of that, what do you see as, you know, as you look ahead for supply chain operating networks, you know, what's next, right? Well, what, how will supply chain operating networks continue to evolve in the years ahead?
Yeah, the first point first, I guess. So the supply chain operating networks are going to be different from each other in the breadth and depth of their ability of business process automation, as well as the quality and the number of trading partners. So depending on the relationships between trading partners across different operating networks, then you're going to start seeing some activities around collaboration and federation there. So I completely agree. But it's going to be a process in that you know, what's going to happen is a SCORM A versus SCORM B, and if there is the clash between the SCORMs, if I may, then you know, it's going to take a little while to actually realize what are the strengths with SCORM A versus weaknesses of SCORM A, and similarly see if there's any complementary aspects with other SCORMs, and this eventually has to make sense to the participants. So the power of these cons are going to be driven by the participants at the end of the day. And while I definitely do see complementary activities, I think federation is a better word to use from a codependency point of view. Now, where do I specifically see things moving? Now, I have two different views. So the first is more of a system, a landscape type view, where, you know, we start talking about message exchanges. And okay, assume that you're able to successfully exchange messages, you've crossed the EDI barrier, you've crossed the B2B network barrier, and now you're able to automate your processes, you have cross-process visibility, and so on. The next step is to actually start managing exceptions around these processes. So you want to get into self-service models where you, as a customer service representative in a company, could say, these are some of the exceptions that make sense to me, and I'd like to manage these. So you open up things in self-service mode. Everything should be configurable. Everything should make sense. Mobile devices for only high critical alerts, and so on and so forth. So I definitely do see some trends in that direction. And finally, where this is going to end is in proactive management of either exceptions or the process itself. So you could predict that, you know, there's going to be some issues with particular carriers based on some seasonality that you've seen in the past, trends, analytics, and so on. So that's a system view, if I may, progressing all the way from message exchanging to managing exceptions to proactive management of processes and exceptions. But there's a very interesting trend which ties in very closely with the LinkedIn and Facebook model. There's going to be a significant change in the workforce over the next few years. So if you look at the percentage of millennials joining the workforce, now trust me, if not anything, even if they may not have any experience in supply chain, they're going to come loaded with 5 years of experience on Facebook. So I say that jokingly, but that's the reality. I mean, they bring in a new paradigm altogether. So, you know, think about faxes and spreadsheets, turning around and punching orders. Those are all replaced by Amazon OneClick. It's replaced by a Facebook like. It's replaced with a tweet. Others who bought this also liked this product. I mean, that is where things are trending, and this is going to be triggered and pushed hard by the new workforce that's coming into these industries. So I do see two different tracks that are going to be the driving force for changes in the ecosystem and the supply chain operating network.
Yeah, your last point there was great with the millennial workforce and those that are even coming after them, right? I've often joked that millennial shows up to work today, and if they're given their computer and say, well, here's the ERP system you're going to work on, or here's the enterprise application you're going to work on, and in a lot of cases, they're 3, 4, 5 generations old. They haven't upgraded in a long time, and they look at these screens and they go, wait, I have to click how many times to do this, or how many windows do I have to open, they'll kind of just scratch their head, go, how can anyone work like this, right? Because to your point, we're so used to as in our personal lives with these user interfaces that the Googles, the Facebooks, the Amazons, so on and so forth. And certainly, I'm seeing some of the best practices in those UIs making their way into enterprise applications, and certainly that's going to continue to happen in the months and years ahead. And we will see that transformation, and I think it will be a powerful one when we get there, as well as mobile. The ability to interact with applications, to initiate transactions, to search, so on and so forth via mobile devices, I think is something that, all the pundits out there that you talk to, and you look at all the data, it's just amazing the direction that's moving in as well. Arun, we're running short on time here, so I'm just going to go right to my last question here, kind of as a way to wrap up. I mean, what questions should supply chain executives ask to assess whether their approach and capabilities around trading partner connectivity, communication, and collaboration, whether they're best in class or whether there's some room for improvement there?
So let me be a little harsh here, because if as an executive or if as a manager in a company, if you cannot look beyond EDI, then to be honest, you're not necessarily going to be best in class, and it's not going to help you with collaboration at all. To me, the bigger question is, as a leader, why should I be rethinking the way I've conducted business in the past? Why should I change? I think some of the things that they also need to consider is, what are the disruptions that they need to be willing to make in order to reach to the next level of value generation? They also need to rethink, what is economic value, and how can I get that based on the health and quality of my supply chain operating network? Another question they need to ask is, how can I make the interdependency between my trading partners as mutually prosperous as possible without transferring cost from one point to another? This is actually a very profound shift in how business societies think of economic values, and that's where people need to be. And the power of the community is something that should not be undermined, because Silicon Valley is a great example. I mean, you see the strengths and interactions of what you surround with. I mean, everybody there seems to be successful for a reason, even if they're not. But that's how you make your network stronger. How can you get to a better place through collaboration? How can you make your interdependencies more prosperous? I guess those are some of the key questions I would ask, or I would urge the executives to ask.
No, great questions, great food for thought. I often say related to that is, look at the way you're currently communicating and collaborating, not only internally but externally as well. And is it as the most efficient process as possible, right? So, the classic example is if you're sending out emails with 15 attachments and CC lists with 25 people, going back and forth, and that's your view of collaboration. You are going to be left behind very quickly because that mode of communication and collaboration, which still happens a lot. When I say that at conferences, I get a lot of, nodding heads and smiles. I mean, that certainly is probably the least efficient way to communicate and collaborate. And the reality is that executives have to make smarter decisions faster today. And some of these techniques and ways that companies are communicating, collaborating, and sharing information, is completely misaligned with their ability to really be able to synthesize information, derive some actionable insight, and then take those actions. So I think that's the from my perspective, building upon what you just said, kind of one of a key imperative there. Well, Arun, we're out of time. Like I say, every week, we always manage just to scratch the surface on the topics that we discuss. But I think that you did an excellent job kind of differentiating or helping explain perhaps what a supply chain operating network is and how it's different than EDI networks, and how those terms, even though they're used interchangeably, how they are different, and kind of talking a little bit about the direction that supply chain operating networks are heading in, and kind of the power and the benefits that are available and will become even increasingly available in the years and months ahead. So Arun, again, thank you very much for making the time to be with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure, Adrian. Thanks a lot.
And thank you to all of you who joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live today, but if you do have a question for Arun, and if you're watching this program on demand, you can find the episode on talkinglogistics.com, and you can post a question or a comment there, and I'm sure that Arun will be more than happy to respond via that medium. So with that, thank you very much, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.